It was a tough year on the football field for the Commonwealth's two ACC football programs, but spring is in the air, bringing new hope to both Virginia and Virginia Tech. We'll take a look at where things stand with both programs on this special Spring Football Focus edition of the podcast. Welcome in to a special edition of the podcast, a springtime look at both UVA and Virginia Tech football. The two programs, playing their first seasons under new coaches, combined for just 5 wins in 2022. Both the Hokies' Brent Pry and Cavaliers' Tony Elliott know they have to improve on those results, starting with this season. As you'll hear from Roanoke Times' new Tech beat writer Damian Sordelet and Charlottesville Daily Progress UVA beat writer Greg Medea, for both teams, that'll mean improving on the offensive side of the football. Now, we're going to be looking at both of these programs, but if you can't stand hearing about your rival, here's the breakdown. The first 25 minutes here are going to be devoted to the Hokies, to what's going on in Blacksburg, and the second 25 minutes are going to be devoted to the Cavaliers, how things are going and progressing in Charlottesville. We hope you'll enjoy all of that, but those are a couple of bookmarks for you as we get going here, talking spring football in the Commonwealth. Well, it's time to take a look at the Virginia Tech Hokies and where things sit in Blacksburg this spring. And to do that, bring in our new colleague, Damian Sordelet of the Roanoke Times. Damian had covered Liberty for a number of years there in Lynchburg and in the chain. And now we're excited to have him join our ACC coverage here at Lee. And Damian, welcome to the podcast. We're excited to work with you.
Yeah, Mike, I'm excited to join the podcast and join the excellent coverage that Lee Enterprises does with covering ACC, especially here in the Commonwealth. You, Greg, David do such a fantastic job covering the Hokies and the Hoos, and I couldn't be more excited to join the group and be able to help bring more coverage to the Hokies, and especially for football, and hopefully be in tune for an exciting season in 2023.
Yeah, we're gonna see what that holds. We'll talk about that here shortly. But before we do, why don't we introduce you a little bit to our listeners?
Just some backstory on me from a professional standpoint. I started a Lee Enterprise paper in 2008 at the Danville Register and Bee, covering a lot of local sports. And then late 2012 is when I got the break to move up to Lynchburg, start covering Liberty, when that program was still an FCS program, was beginning to compile the resources that would put it in a position where it is now as an upstart FCS FBS program that has won 3 bowl games and has Jamie Chadwell now as the head coach after Hugh Freeze spent 4 years there really building that program. And I did get a chance to see Virginia Tech football a couple times when I was covering Liberty. 2016 was that season opener, Justin Fuentes' first year. Liberty opened the year in Blacksburg. 2020, the COVID year, when Liberty stunned the Hokies on Alex Barbier's 51-yard field goal. Was there for that. And also saw the Hokies this past season in what turned out to be their finale against Liberty at Williams Stadium. Got to see what a Brent Pry team looked like in game action. Like what I saw on defense. The offense definitely needs to make a few changes here and there to get going. And I think Tyler Bowen and that offensive staff have got some ideas in mind to get that going. And I'm excited to see what the spring game holds and excited to see what they can do moving forward with those offensive pieces they were able to bring in during the recruiting period.
Well, let's start there, because that was one of the criticisms of the team a year ago. And honestly, one of the criticisms that came from Brent Pry was that Tyler Bowen and the offense, they were too vanilla. They were too predictable. They weren't doing things to scheme up the offense, which undeniably was lacking playmakers and had a number of personnel issues. What have you seen from what this offense kind of looks like in the spring, and what direction are they going with this thing?
You can see there's a continuity now with how Bowen wants to run the offense, especially in the run game, now with bringing in Ron Crook as the offensive line coach, because Crook's background is in inside zone blocking, generating gaps. And that's the type of run game, the vertical run game that Bowen wants. And, with Joe Rudolph last season, he's more of a power blocking offensive line coach and wants to get that power push up front. And that doesn't really scheme well with inside zones where you need some double team blocks, especially guard center, and then be able to have that guard disengage from the block and get to the second level to be able to create that running lane for your tailback. And that's something we've seen Crook's been able to bring in. He was hired, 2-3 days before spring camp started. And he's been able to bring that energy and bring that type of blocking scheme that fits a Bowen offense. And I think that's going to help quite a bit. Making sure that offensive line is healthy is going to be key, because I know a lot of attention is going to be put on, Grant Wells did not have great numbers in that first year, 9 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. You never want to have a 1-to-1 ratio in that, but he didn't get a lot of time in the pocket a lot. And when your running game is ranked last in the ACC in terms of production, according to Pro Football Focus from a year ago, that certainly doesn't help either. So they're really trying to build that depth on the offensive line. You got guys healthy this year. You're hoping like a Xavier Chaplin at left tackle is able to take that step and become an anchor on that side. Moving Caden Moore to center is a big help because he's arguably their best interior blocker. And I think having, a healthy Parker, Clements on the right side after he played most of last season rehabbing from a meniscus injury, having him healthy, that will be a big boost for this offense. And hopefully you get to see the fruit of what they're building this spring and the fall.
So you got Crooks in and you've got some pieces there on the offensive line. You mentioned that the lack of depth, they've got work to do there, but they certainly had work to do rebuilding the skill positions where they just didn't have the talent really to compete a year ago. I think as people evaluated the offense and for all the criticism of Bowen and Wells, at the end of the day, they weren't putting very good players on the field. Probably their best offensive skill player, Caleb Smith, the wide receiver, he went and transferred to Notre Dame in the offseason. But Damian, they've made some moves to address that, particularly at the receiver position with a trio of guys. What did Virginia Tech do at wide receiver, and how do they look at that spot?
Oh, yeah, you had to go to the transfer portal because you needed to get some impact guys immediately. And one player who should be familiar to everyone in the state, whether you follow Virginia Tech, Virginia Liberty, James Madison, was former Old Dominion receiver Ali Jennings, who put up some gargantuan numbers in 2 seasons at ODU. And he had some big games last year against both the Hokies and the Flames. He had more than 100 yards receiving in both contests. And he came in with a little bit of a minor injury, according to Brent Pry, but he's going to be your wide receiver one. He had more than 2,000 receiving yards in his 2 seasons at Old Dominion. He gives you that vertical option, that 6'2 body that's very physical on the outside. And then you mentioned the other two receiver transfers they brought in. Daquan Felton, a 6'5 body from Norfolk State. He's another guy on the outside who's going to make big plays. And then in the slot, you're bringing in Middle Tennessee's Jalen Lane. And when you're able to bring in those three guys to really accelerate the growth of that receiver room, so that way, you can bring in a guy like Steven Gosnell in certain packages. You can allow Tucker Holloway to develop, because remember, he did a lot of good things last year as a true freshman, but you probably need him to have another year of seasoning before he can become the guy in the passing attack. So bringing in those three guys really helps and can help, bring along some guys to help with their development, but also bring some immediate production for this upcoming season.
Those are going to be the targets. The question is going to be, who's delivering the football to them? Because Grant Wells, you mentioned, he came in from Marshall, and they had high hopes. He had done some nice things at Marshall. The coaching staff in the offseason praised his accuracy, praised his ball security, and then he was shaky on game days for the Hokies in Brent Pry's first year. Maybe to address that, to build some depth, bring some competition, they went out and got Kyron Drones from Baylor, a transfer quarterback. Is that a legitimate competition, and where do you see things there?
Yeah, it's a legit competition right now. But the spring practices I've seen, Wells has been throwing the ball the best of any of the quarterbacks. And Pry brought this up recently, that if you go back to last spring, Wells was having another great spring, was having the best spring out of anyone in that group. What you don't want to see is a regression. And that's part of the reason why Pry elected to put Tyler Bowen as the quarterback's coach, even though Bowen doesn't have any quarterback experience and hasn't coached the position prior to this spring. Having your offensive coordinator in the quarterback room will help, because Bowen admitted this before spring that there were times during the year he felt there was things weren't lining up with him and the play callers in terms of understanding if Wells was comfortable running a certain scheme during games, and if he was comfortable with maybe the RPO, the play action, what they wanted to do schematically. And now being in that room on a daily basis, he's going to know, you know, whether Wells or Drones, whoever wins the battle, is able to be comfortable with what they want, or you scheme it to where it fits their comfort and it fits the style that they want to use. And I think that move's going to help quite a bit. I know you're not going to see a lot of it in the spring because right now they're going through install. You're trying to see who's going to win the battle. And I think the fruit of it's going to be in the fall, where if moving Bowen to the quarterback room and developing those guys himself is going to help this offense. And I think we'll see if they go with the Wells, who's the more pocket passer, who's the more polished passer, or whether they want to get Drones, who's the better athlete. He's got some running ability. His delivery isn't as polished as Wells, because Wells has a ton of experience compared to Drones, who, you know, is listed as a redshirt sophomore. So if they can clean that up, I think Drones could really push Wells heading into fall camp and maybe give this Hokies offense a different dynamic than what we've seen, what we were able to see last year.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you don't want to call it spin, but, it was a year ago this time that these coaches were kind of praising the idea that Brad Glenn was the quarterback coach and he didn't have to worry about the rest of the offense and the play calling, and he could focus on developing quarterbacks. And Brent Pry was explaining why that was such a great setup. And now, obviously, that didn't work out. And now they're kind of praising the new setup and the continuity that you'll get. I do have my questions with Bowen. Especially when you think about Drones being younger, you think about Taj Bullock and the development there, and then the other young quarterbacks they have in that room. Are they getting the level of coaching that you're going to need to develop as a quarterback versus, are you getting the immediate results of maybe being more comfortable with the offense and the play caller? It's going to be something to watch, I think, in this Virginia Tech program. If this is the way they stick, are you developing quarterbacks the way you need to? That was really the thing that sabotaged the previous coaching staff. And they had continuity and all of those good things, but they never got right at the quarterback position. And it really prevented Justin Fuente's tenure from really ever getting rolling. So to me, that'll be an interesting to keep an eye on. Pry is a guy with a defensive background. That's where he came from. It's what he did at Penn State. It's what he knows best. Certainly had a heavy hand in the defense a year ago. Chris Marv was the defensive coordinator, but Brent Pry, until the final game, called the plays. What do we see on that side of the ball? Because you mentioned in the opening, Damian, I thought they were pretty solid defensively.
Yeah, they were a top 50 defense a year ago. And, they could have won more than three games last year if they came away with some takeaways. So they point to blowing that big fourth quarter lead against Georgia Tech at home, that if you come up with some plays on the defensive end, especially over those final 15 minutes, Virginia Tech wins that game. And there are some other instances that, guys have brought up that, like, man, if we can just get takeaways. And you saw that with the Liberty win. They were able to get some takeaways, especially in the fourth quarter, with two key fumble recoveries, one that led to the go-ahead touchdown and one that led to the touchdown that sealed the victory. And you're bringing back a good core on the defensive end. I know you're losing like a Dax Holyfield, who was your leader at Mike linebacker. He was that guy who had been there for 5 years and was the emotional leader, but you're able to bring back a host of players who have waited in the wings and are ready to pounce. If you look in the secondary, if we'll start there, Dorian Strong and Mansour Delane are two really good cornerbacks who have a tremendous amount of length and good coverage skills. Strong's healthy now, and Delane is hoping to build off that freshman All-American campaign. And Strong even mentioned when we talked to him earlier this spring that, you know, he regressed in his sophomore year because he felt being a freshman All-American, he had gotten to where he needed to get to. Now he's trying to make sure Delane doesn't fall into that same trap and continues to work hard. And then when you bring in a transfer from Georgia Southern and Derek Canteen, who is a really good cornerback and can also play nickelback, you have some versatility there. And then another player who's really stood out is Jalen Stroman there at the free safety position. He got some what would equate to starters reps last year because of having to play Chamari Connor at nickelback quite a bit last year, and he was able to play back there at the safety position. And I think Stroman has he looks fast. He looks very decisive back there at safety. And, you know, that's going to help quite a bit because now they're developing that rotation on the front end. They're getting back players from injury, Feldarius Payne, the transfer from Nebraska who never saw the field last year because of an Achilles injury. He's recently come back and is practicing. And now you have like a legit 5 to 6 deep at defensive tackle. You have, you know, legit 4 defensive ends. And then that will help quite a bit because now you can use your 4-3 base defense. You can mix in the nickel package and be able to be creative in how you attack these offenses and have the packages necessary and the athletes to be able to make plays consistently on that defense. So that way that side of the ball continues to be the undeniable strength for this team.
Defensive end is where I had my question and in the pass rush when I look at this team, because there's a lot of names back in the interior of that defensive line. When you think about Mario Kendricks and you think about Josh Fuga and you think about Norrell Pollard, names that have been around and have been developing, have been bulking up. I like the interior. I'm not sure about the outside. Now, you take a guy like CJ McCray, and I know he can play outside linebacker. He can play defensive end. When you think about the pass rush, where does he fit in, and what do you see at the defensive end position right now for the Hokies?
Yeah, McCray's been getting first-team reps at defensive end, and they really like him there, especially opposite Cole Nelson, who's been getting first-team reps. So you're bringing in two, you know, big guys over at that defensive end position. I mean, McCray 6'3", Nelson 6'3". McCray's body looks really good right now at 246 pounds. He still has that explosiveness off the edge. And that added weight and muscle should be able to allow him to match up against these bigger tackles he's going to face. Not only, you know, your two Big Ten non-conference opponents, but also in ACC play. And then, you know, behind them, I think that's where you get kind of excited because now you're seeing Jordan McDonald, one of the two twins from the Salem area who are on this team. He's really developed and he's been pushing, especially McCray, off that right edge for playing time. And I think that's going to help quite a bit. And then you have Keyshawn Burgess over, you know, Chesterfield kid who went to Metoica. He's been pushing Nelson off that left edge. And I think, you know, those two, both sophomores, are really starting to take that next step. And that's what you want to see in terms of developing these younger guys, is getting those guys ready to play, especially this upcoming season, because you're going to need that depth behind McCray and Nelson. And I think being able to have a 6'4 edge rusher like McDonald and then put him on the opposite side of a 6'5 edge like Burgess, you're going to have the opportunity to create some havoc. And I think that's what Tech fans should like about this defensive line, because now you're adding some size off the edge, especially if you can develop those guys and you have them playing really well come league play and maybe getting a considerable amount of reps at that time.
You know, it's interesting at this time of year, we have these conversations and we're trying to give people a good idea of what, you know, Virginia Tech or UVA or anybody is going to look like in the fall. And the reality is, Damian, that when spring ball ends, you're going to have some people enter the transfer portal. They don't love where they are on the two deep or off the two deep. They're going to leave. And you're going to have some guys at other schools who fit needs for Virginia Tech. So this is a roster that could ultimately have some changes. I don't think it's got as many holes as some other teams in the conference right now. But if you're Virginia Tech and you go into this offseason, and I know you can't predict who may leave. But looking at what they have now, are there a couple positions that you think they could address in the portal before next fall to really strengthen their case for next season?
You know, offensive line depth is certainly one of the ones that you want to see addressed, and especially at the tackle position, because you don't want a Xavier Chaplin or a Parker Clements to be out there the amount of snaps that, you know, Silas Danzy or Clements were out there last year, because they, you know, if you look at the Pro Football Focus numbers, they played like more than 90% of the snaps at the tackle positions. And that's something where, yeah, you got your starters, but you're going to need to get them breathers, and you really help develop some younger players by getting them some game reps. So I think adding some depth on the offensive line, especially tackle, is going to be a big deal. Again, we don't know what that transfer portal window is going to look like for 15 days when May hits. And I think linebacker depth is going to be another position where you're going to want to see some guys, maybe bring some guys in. You know, they've really been high on Jaden Keller and Kelly Lawson's development this year. But behind Keontae Jenkins at Sam linebacker, you know, because of J.R. Walker choosing to leave the program, there's a little bit of a gap there. And I know they've, you know, moved Jalen Hoyle now to a wholesale move to play that Sam position. But I think getting some more experience on at linebacker will help. I mean, you do have Alan Tisdale, who had a minor setback, and he recently came back. So, you know, you have an experienced guy like Tisdale, who coaches have called the alpha in that room, back. And then you have Jaden McDonald as well. But I think you need to get more depth there, because they've been running a lot of walk-ons in the two deep so far in camp. And I think if you can get some more experience there, that will certainly help for the upcoming season, if that happens to be at the top of the wish list for the Hokies in terms of filling out the scholarship number and maybe replenishing some positions, like you said, during this second transfer portal window.
It's a little bit of a different time in college football. I think Tech fans were used to the idea that, you know, Bud Foster could bring in a walk-on linebacker, and all of a sudden, you know, he'd end up being an all-conference guy like a Jack Tyler. It's a little harder to do that now. Now you need those guys who really are physically up to snuff, and there's so many programs out there that you don't have as many guys slipping through the cracks. Let me end, Damian, by asking you this. There was some excitement when Brent Pry was hired. He was kind of a great mix of a throwback to Tech's tradition and glory years, along with, you know, new ideas and a guy who had been other places. Then they came and kind of laid an egg, 2017, that lost to Old Dominion in his debut. Obviously, the season, not a great one. 3-8 is what they finish up, only 1-6 in conference. They did end with the win over Liberty. There were a lot of things that they point to in terms of improvement and momentum from that game. And I know you're new on the beat, but you're not new to the Commonwealth, and you're certainly not new to people talking about the Hokies. What's the vibe you get in terms of, are people excited? Are people high on this team? Are they high on this program? Are they taking kind of a wait-and-see approach still with Brent Pry? What do you get the sense the vibe is?
I get a sense that right now it's a wait and see, because you want to see how the offense, what the offense was going to look like come, you know, that season opener against Old Dominion at Lane Stadium, because, you know, you get a sense from the fan base, they want to see a little bit more excitement on the offensive side. And you can tell based on, you know, mentions on Twitter, whenever you tweet out Grant Wells is taking first team reps, fan base isn't exactly thrilled about that, but they want to see something that shows that the program is trending in the right direction. And, honestly, I think that's, you're going to have to wait to the season to see that, because there's a lot of moving pieces right now. You're moving, the offensive line, you got right guard is still a position that they're still trying to figure out who they want to go with, whether it's Jesse Hansen or Bob Schick. And so you're still trying to put the pieces together for what you hope to be will be an improved offense. And, you know, you got the positions at the skill that have been improved. You hope Malachi Thomas can be, you know, workhorse running back. And then you bring in the transfer from North Carolina State and Bashel Tootin, who has been pushing him quite a bit as 1A, 1B running back. So you hope you have that guy who can pull the trigger, who can be the one who gets this offense going. And I think if Grant Wells is the starter and he comes out and he has a really great performance against Old Dominion, complete 180 from what everyone saw last year in Norfolk, then you're going to see some definite excitement from this fan base. And I think that's what they're waiting to see. I think they want to see what that opener looks like, and especially with the non-conference schedule where you got two good Sun Belt teams, you got two Big Ten programs. See how the team has developed then heading into ACC play. And then, if it's a good start, all those chatter of last year and how everyone hated where it was going will probably dissipate. And if there are struggles, then everything you heard last year will come back to the forefront.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They open the season September 2nd at home against Old Dominion. Before that, obviously, coming up here shortly, we've got the spring game. Damon, I think you're going to enjoy that experience in Lane Stadium, and then you'll enjoy next season as well, having the role of covering.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you for having me on, and look forward to working with you guys at Lee Enterprises.
Well, we're going to take a look at Virginia football, what they're getting accomplished this spring, what they needed to get accomplished, and who better to talk about that with than my partner from the Lee Chain, Greg Medea of the Charlottesville Daily Progress. He's the outstanding beat writer for the paper there. We work very closely together, and I'm looking forward to doing this show with you, Greg.
Yeah, Mike, happy to join you. Spring football well underway at UVA, so good time to do it.
Yeah, we're about a week and a half out from the spring game. And Greg, obviously, this was a program that struggled mightily last season. Offensively, it's fair to say that the transition from the air raid style of Robert and I to the more pro style of Tony Elliott was very ineffective. They averaged 17 points a game and really never got their feet under the ground on that side of the ball. They're going to have major changes in turnover personnel-wise there. That obviously stood out. But this was also a team that greatly improved on the defensive side under John Rudzinski, more of a bend-but-don't-break defensive approach, and it really suited Virginia well. Obviously, the wins and losses didn't go Virginia's way, but as you went into this spring, what were the biggest concerns or areas of work that you thought Virginia needed to attend to?
I think first and foremost, the glaring spot was the offensive line, right? New O-line coach at Virginia and Terry Heffernan, after Garrett Touje went with an eye and Brennan Armstrong down to NC State also. So it was going to be, there were going to be some changes up front, not only personnel-wise, lost a couple of pieces to graduation and the portal. So it's breaking in some new faces on that front. Which makes the task a little bit tougher for the new O-line coach, Terry Heffernan. So I thought that'd be one area certainly to pay attention to. You look at the defensive backfield, Rudzinski and his fellow secondary coach, Karome Cox, did an outstanding job a season ago with Anthony Johnson and Fentrell Cypress, but those two are gone. Johnson off to the NFL and Cypress transferring to Florida State. So you have to look at that corner spot as an area of the defense is one that certainly is going to need some work and have to be addressed. So I think I've watched those two positions pretty closely in the spring. And I think with Heffernan and the offensive line, what stuck out to me is something he said, in fact, this past Monday. And that's that the group has embraced the noise, has embraced all the doubters around them. He said he was in a grocery store, excuse me, Ty Furnish relayed this story about Heffernan, that he was in a grocery store and not long after getting the job at UVA, coming over from Stanford and David Shaw's staff there, and that a Virginia fan had come up to him and said something along the lines of, man, that offensive line needs a lot of work. And Heffernan relayed it to the O-line guys. And he said, the only way to embrace it, to look at it and use it is to see it as fuel, see it as something that can motivate the guys on the offensive line. So that I think has been interesting, and it's been back to fundamentals for that group. And I think he's a big stickler for that. At corner, some new faces, Tavon Kyle, the transfer from Iowa State, and Will Simpkins, who didn't play much at all last year. He's been in the mix. So those two position groups, I think, probably if you had to pick one on each side of the ball, would be of the most concern if you're a Virginia fan.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, Tony Elliott has said flat out that when spring ends, they're going to pursue a starting caliber corner to add to that group. So obviously, as they go through spring, they know that they don't have all the answers here. The offensive line is always interesting because that's the exact trajectory that we saw under the former staff, right? Garrett 2J came in and the offensive line was the problem and they were the weakness. And he tried to use that to push that group along. And eventually they got really good and then everybody left and he had to do it again. And he did successfully. And then everybody left again when Bronco and that staff or most of that staff moved on. So it's interesting that Virginia's right back in that same hole again, probably for the third time in the last 6 or 7 years of rebuilding an offensive line that is trying to fuel itself with the idea that it's the weak point. Well, let's start on the weak side of the ball, the offense, which is crazy to say because in 2021, Bronco Mendenhall's final season, the offense absolutely carried the team, and had the defense even been functional, they might have won 8 or 9 games. Instead, the offense was putting up 35 points a game, and the defense was giving up almost double that, and you just couldn't get anything going. Last year, it was the opposite story. Obviously, offensively, Virginia, Tony Elliott, this new offense, they never really got their feet under them. Now, Brennan Armstrong is gone. They're breaking in a new quarterback in Tony Musket. We'll see what they do with Jay Wolfuck, who's also spending time with baseball. But certainly the trend is for maybe Musket to start and Wolfuck to have packages, maybe even play some at receiver. You look at the receiving core, which had been just so talented for a number of years here. They're really rebuilding there. But, Greg, there's some intriguing pieces because you think about Malachi Fields and what he could be. And it's just the nature of things that if you have older guys ahead of you and then he had the injury. But Malachi Fields seems like a guy who could be a big-time talent that you could build this receiving core around. What have you seen from Malachi this spring?
Yeah, I think it's encouraging that he's back to where he wants to be, kind of pre-injury. He said last year was tough, and when the receivers coach, Adam Mims, new receivers coach, promoted from within to replace the departed Marcus Hagans, who went to Penn State after being at Virginia his entire coaching career. Mims had said that Fields really defied odds last year in terms of getting back. When he went down with the foot injury, you know, they thought, you know, there's no chance they would see him in 2022, but he worked rehab and got back sooner than they thought and actually contributed, scored a touchdown in their final game of the season against Pittsburgh. And he's kind of picked up where he's left off. He's comfortable, and he's certainly looking to be maybe their number one option at receiver this spring. And like you said, they have a different mix of players at receiver, right? J.R. Wilson, he's not quite Malachi Fields in terms of the physicality, the size, the strength. He's kind of in between and likes to play with some finesse, he said. Then you've got Malik Washington, the transfer from Northwestern, who's been a really good addition to the group because they needed an older guy who had been around. I think he was 6th or 7th in the Big Ten this past fall in catches, and he brings a lot of experience with him. So he's someone they're going to rely on, likely out of the slot. And then you have Demeke Starling, who, by all accounts, is the fastest guy probably on the team and is an absolute burner and can run down the field and catch the long ball. So I think those four are probably your primary mix of receivers. Jaden Gibson, the freshman early enrollee, watching him at practice this past week, it looked like maybe he could be someone that can help. I don't know if it's this year or down the road, but an intriguing piece. And then even at tight end, I think Sackett Wood had a good finish to this past fall. Grant Misch has been around forever, is on his 6th season of college football. And then there's Carson Gay, younger guy at tight end, big, tall, physical tight end there that maybe can make some plays in the passing game for them. But I think if you're looking at receiver, it starts with Fields in Washington, and then I think J.R. Wilson and Demeke Starling will certainly play a role as well.
Yeah, a guy that I'm really interested to see is Dakota Twitty, because you talked about Malachi Fields a bunch, and Malachi Fields, when you walk out on the practice field, right, he looks the part. You're like, that guy's a big-time wide receiver. Dakota Twitty looks the part. When you walk out there, and now he's able to do a little more, he had the knee injury his senior year of high school. It cost him last season. You look at Dakota Twitty, though, and you're like, okay, that guy is built the way you want a wide receiver to be built at Power 5 football. Where is he in his development? Where is he in his recovery? All of those things. Those are big questions. But to me, Dakota Twitty is a really, really intriguing piece that could add something offensively.
Yeah, I think so. The only question there is whether or not you want to have to rely on a freshman coming off, or not a freshman, right? He's a freshman this past fall, redshirt freshman this coming fall he'll be. And, you know, I guess the question is, do you want to rely on a young guy coming off injury, hasn't played a snap of college football yet? That's the only concern. If he can do it, great. And then he adds another element to that receiver group. But I do think, you know, for all the pieces that are gone, right? Dontavian Wicks off to the NFL and Keaton Thompson, who would be such an important piece of their offense the past couple of seasons. You know, they do have some potential there, and it looks like they should be all right at receiver as long as they can figure out the chemistry with the quarterback.
Yeah, and they've got some guys who've played, which is important. Now, you mentioned the quarterback, and that's obviously a huge question mark. And Tony Musket came in from Monmouth. We met him on a day they brought all the transfers, and he kind of bristled at my question asking, hey, man, how could a quarterback from Monmouth compete at the Power 5 level? But I'll ask you that question. How can a quarterback from Monmouth be the answer for an ACC program?
Yeah, it's a good question and a fair question. The one thing I'll look at is when he began his career, Monmouth was in the Big South. He was an all Big South conference guy twice over. He played in the same league that actually Taylor Lamb, Virginia's quarterback coach, was an offensive coordinator in at Gardner Webb. So that's where the familiarity, I think, came in terms of the recruitment and knowing what Musket can bring to the table. So that, I think, is important. And then also, Monmouth jumped up to the CAA, which is one of the better FCS leagues in the country. The Big South is not that, but the CAA has good programs, right? Those in Virginia should be familiar with, you know, William & Mary and Richmond. It's the league James Madison was in for a long time before they made the jump to the FBS. So I think that in itself was a pretty significant move going from the Big South to the CAA and seeing some better players, right? The CAA turns out some NFL guys too. So I think he's seen a little bit higher level of competition in 2022 than he did earlier in his FCS career. I thought, you know, if he's jumping straight from the Big South to the ACC, that's a bigger jump. The CAA kids, they're a little more prepared, a little more, a little closer to what, you know, Power 5 football, or not Power 5, FBS football is, I should say. So I think he'll be ready. He's mature. He's been around. He's probably seen a lot in terms of what a quarterback, what can be thrown at a quarterback. So I do think he'll be all right in terms of the jump. There's going to be a learning curve, right? He'll have to get used to the faster speed of the game. He'll have to get used to seeing bigger bodies in front of him on the offensive line and defensive lines. There's a big difference there. But for someone that's continued to ascend in his career, maybe this is just the next step. And he did tell me, you know, earlier in his career, before he decided to take Monmouth up on its scholarship offer, he had an opportunity to be on Virginia's roster. Virginia came in late when he was in high school at West Springfield in Northern Virginia, and offered him essentially a preferred walk-on spot to the Cavaliers. At that time, he decided to take the scholarship offer. Didn't know he'd ever end up back with an opportunity to play at UVA, but was happy to do so, happy to return to his home state.
What style of player is it? Because obviously Tony Elliott, Des Kitchings, they're running this pro-style offense where they want the quarterback to be, I don't want to say robotic because that's not the answer, but, you know, measure your steps, measure your timing, deliver the ball to a spot. What are Musket's strengths, and how do they blend with what Elliott and Kitchings want to do with him?
So he actually said Monmouth's offense was pretty similar. What he did at Monmouth was pretty similar to what Virginia does. I don't know how well that translates, but you got to hope there's some carryover there so he can be at least familiar and get on the same page as players who have been in the system for a year. By all accounts, he's had no trouble stepping in and kind of asserting himself as a quarterback should, voice of the offense, that kind of deal. The players around him, and I think Grant Mitch had said it, the tight end, veteran tight end, said, you know, Tony is a leader, a guy that's not afraid to say something and get with his receivers and throw after practice, throw before practice, that kind of deal, to make sure some of those stress points maybe are alleviated. So I think that's important. In terms of type of quarterback, I think you're getting, Virginia's getting a pretty good, pretty polished player at this point. I talked to a couple of his former coaches, his high school coach and one of his college coordinators who's now at another school after Musket had committed. And what they said is, you know, he's a guy that'll work really, really hard. He'll make throws that maybe you don't think he could make, but he'll stun you. But his work ethic is really what separated him at that level. And they think he can play at Virginia. They think the jump wouldn't be too much for him to do. I think they're excited for him and you know, think Virginia found something good there. And remember, Virginia wasn't the only school after him. You know, he had some group of five offers. Missouri was in on him. So it's not like Virginia wasn't the only one who thought he could play at the FBS level.
Well, one thing that can take some pressure off him, and again, we talked about the offensive line, it's got to be functional for any of this to work, but one thing that could take some pressure off him, they bring back a ton of talent at the running back position. Paris Jones is a very experienced player. Mike Hollins, the amazing comeback after being a victim in that tragic shooting on campus, the fact that he's even in the mix taking reps and has a chance to maybe play again this season is kind of stunning and amazing and just a great story for Mike there. Xavier Brown, I thought was really promising as the year went on. I know last year at the end of the year, he told me he was kind of feeling the wear and tear of college football as a freshman, the beating he was taking. I think he's come back bigger and stronger. And then they add Kobe Pace, the transfer from Clemson, who has perhaps the best skill set of anybody in that group. Ahmad Faustin's coming back from injury. This is a deep and talented and experienced position group. Again, you can only run as well as you can block. But Greg, I think running back to me looks like the strength of this offense.
I don't think there's any doubt that group is very, very deep. It's created good competition. And I think what Pace adds, at least what Keith Gaither said, the running backs coach, what Virginia didn't have last year, and that's that big play ability, that ability to turn what looks like, you know, a couple yard gain into, you know, a first down or a long run or perhaps a touchdown run. So that's what Pace adds to the group. And he was productive in 2021 at Clemson when Elliott was still the offensive coordinator there. So Elliott, having recruited him the first time around to Clemson, able to reconnect with Pace again and get him to Virginia. I think with Hollins and Jones, those two guys, you probably know what you're going to get. The one positive with Hollins, aside from obviously the great story that it is returning from the tragedy and the shooting and being told that, you know, it'd take 4 or 5 weeks or what, a couple months there to just pick up something or put on his socks to playing full, you know, full-fledged football out there and taking contact now too, is truly impressive. But he finished last year really strong. He ran well in the North Carolina game. He had the long reception against Miami. So I think there's some hope there that he can build off of what he did late in the year when he was playing pretty well before Virginia's season was ended prematurely. So I think that's a great story, but you also have a number of different weapons there at running back for the Cavaliers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, Tony Elliott has made it very clear after Virginia was just throwing the ball around the yard the year before he got there that he wanted more balance, that he wanted to lean into a run game. Again, I think he's got great pieces at the running back position. We'll see what they can do up front. Now, that's the tough side of things, right? The offense. Can they get it functional? Can they score more than 17 points a game that they averaged a year ago? Defensively, Greg, this team really turned things around last year, really looked good under John Rudzinski in this new defensive scheme. Now, they lose some pieces, no doubt. Nick Jackson and a pair of all-conference corners. Those are tough spots to lose pieces, but they bring everybody back on the defensive line. They're incredibly deep at the safety position. They're aware of their deficiency at corner, and obviously we're trying to address that through transfers and some development. So how good can this defense be? And do we think that this is going to be another season where the defense kind of has to do the heavy lifting?
Yeah, I think the defense can be pretty good, especially two factors, Mike. I think first you look at the defensive line and the personnel they have there. For all the flaws maybe Virginia had this past season, they've got a group of defensive linemen most teams around the country would sign up for and say, you know what, I'll take that, you know, 7-8 deep and older veteran guys, some with some NFL potential. A lot of teams in the country would probably be jealous of the defensive line Virginia's going to run out there this fall. And, you know, I think it starts with Cam Butler at DN and Chico Bennett on the other side at Bandit. Jameer Carter is excellent in his role as a guy who can keep offensive linemen off of linebackers. Famui is experienced and he's back. So that defensive line is really good. Michael Diada rising up the roster a little bit. Ben Smiley too. Paul Akiri, I think he'll be better in his second year with the team after joining them from Columbia the year before. And then the other factor too, Mike, I think is the coaching staff. The entire defensive staff is back. With Rodzinski and Jerome Cox and Clint Sintem. You mentioned Chris Slade as well. And who am I missing? Kevin Downing, the defensive tackles coach. That group is all back together. And that's something I asked a couple of them about, is what's that meant to you guys and how has that impacted how things go? And, you know, they said, a couple of them said, you know, it's been really good. And that they worked well together last year and were able to do some good things and are hoping to build on that. And Downing actually said something that really stuck out to me is, you know, one thing that really helped them was getting off to a fast start last year and showing those early signs of improvement. The players bought in and just continued to kind of snowball into something positive for them. And he said, you know, the one thing that Rodzinski does so well is he allows them to play fast. And if there's anything players look confused about or don't quite understand, Rodzinski's not going to put it in or not going to call it. So I think that's one interesting element with this defense, is you got coaches that know their strengths and know the limitations of the defense. So that's probably a positive. But I think certainly the defense will be leaned on, especially early in the season, just because that's where you've got the experience. That's where you've got the older veteran guys. And players who have an understanding of what it takes to perform well together.
It seems like a roster that should be able to get after the quarterback. And I know that John's not a huge exotic blitz package guy, right? It's very different than a Bud Foster defense or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they've got guys. When I'm thinking about Cam Butler, I'm thinking about Ben Smiley, I'm thinking about Chico Bennett, who should be healthy after missing the spring. You mentioned Akiri. It seems like they've got guys on the edge who can really be disruptive. And that's something that I imagine will help take some pressure off whatever they do at the corner position. Again, I know John's not crazy aggressive in the way he goes after the quarterback, but it seems like the talent is there to be a good pass rush team.
Yeah, imagine if you can get to a quarterback with just four guys, or maybe bring in an extra when you have to, that's a major luxury. That can mask a lot of issues if you have issues in other spots. So that's a really good point, Mike. And remember, this defense averaged 3 sacks per game last season, which was a very, very good number, you know, near the top of the ACC, top, I can't remember exactly what it was in the country, but excellent. For sure. When you bring back guys who know what they're doing, have an understanding and a feel for it, it's only going to improve, only should improve up front. I think at linebacker, you know, you look at that could be an issue, right? They're losing Nick Jackson, who was a three straight season of 100 or more tackles performer. But, you know, you probably don't have to have that necessarily, right? If you can get contributions from a couple of different players, James Jackson, Stevie Bracy, Trey McDonald, playing behind that defensive line, and that's the important part of it too, right? Those guys will keep the offensive linemen off the linebackers and allow them to make tackles. If you get enough contribution from a couple of guys, I think you'll be okay and be able to make up for some of that production lost with Nick Jackson heading off to Iowa.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, you know, I think James Jackson's a guy who's played. Josh Aaron's a guy who's played. Stevie Bracy and Trey McDonald, I think, maybe are the two most talented guys in that group right now. What will they do there? But I mentioned it earlier, you know, they bring back so much at the safety position, and there's certainly a chance, because we've seen Lex Long practicing some at kind of a hybrid linebacker spot this spring, instead of the nickel where he played in the past. I think you're looking at Antonio Clary, Jonas Sanker, Lex Long, the physicality of a Cam Kelly. I think this might be a deal where you're almost asking those safeties to come up, get in the box, and be a little bit more involved to take some of the pressure off those linebackers.
Yeah, I think so. And Long, like if you look at him, he looks like a guy who could do that with his size, his physicality. Sanker was pretty good in run support last year, and can probably repeat some of those same things. What's interesting to me about that secondary, right? You've written about this too, is that they're a little more thin at corner than they are at safety, and I'm wondering exactly what's going to happen with Cohen King, depending on what Virginia gets out of the portal when the portal opens here, and it's coming soon, April 15th, right? Portal opens again, and you'll have a little bit of a free for all, but I think Cohen King can help them. At safety or at corner, he's played all the safety spots in his career. If he can help them at corner too, that's nice. But I'm fascinated to see what they do with him because he's going to play, right? You don't come back for an extra year if you don't think you're going to play and contribute. So I think he's going to be a factor as well. Tavon Kyle, the other corner, what I think is fascinating. He got tested in that Big 12, right? I know they've gone a little more downhill in that league in the past couple of years, but when he started his career, that league was the pass happy, wide open, air it out, air raid, everybody running the Mike Leach stuff type of league. So he's seen it. He's been tested before. And I think his experience will help them.
It's going to be interesting, you know, because it is a rebuild, right? I mean, everybody looks at what Bronco did, and he made them ACC Coastal Division champions and then had them in the running for it again his final year until that Pitt game. And, you know, but that was a build, and Bronco won two games his first year. Tony Elliott went 3-7, so there was work to be done. The previous staff, they did it. They got to a point where things looked good. What happened. Bronco decided it was time to take a break. They have to restart. Now, I think if there's a reason for positivity, and there's always, Greg, reason for positivity in the spring, right? The spring is the season of rebirth. And I look up and down this depth chart, and I see what could be fairly labeled as question marks at almost every position. Sometimes the answers to those questions are positive answers, right? Maybe Tony Musket's going to be really good. Maybe Malik Washington is going to be a guy you can build around. Maybe Malik Fields is ready to be a star. Maybe one of those running backs becomes a breakout player. The defense, maybe it continues the way it's going. Chico Bennett, Cam Butler, maybe they become just menaces on the edge. So I look at this, I look at everything we just talked about, and I think, hey man, you know, if these questions come back with good answers, maybe things improve. Certainly if they remain questions and issues going into the season, there's going to be some problems. But Greg, I appreciate you taking some time out to look at the Cavaliers this spring, and I look forward to doing it again as we get closer to the season in the fall.
No doubt, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, Virginia opens its season September 2nd in Nashville, a neutral and name-only site game against powerful Tennessee. The Hokies get going that same day, hosting Old Dominion at Lane Stadium. And, of course, the two rivals are scheduled to meet each other in Charlottesville on September 25th in the regular season finale as they renew their annual battle for the Commonwealth Cup. You'll be able to follow along all season at richmond.com, dailyprogress.com, and roanoke.com, and, of course, by following Greg, Damian, and me on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly, and was a production of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com. Enjoy the rest of spring. Football and the fall are just around the corner.